More than a century after his passing, Mark Twain's legacy continues to flourish. Born in 1835, Samuel Langhorne Clemens was once called America's favorite humorist. He became a force for healing America in the post-Civil War years with his humor, satire, and tales of adventure. A new book, Mark Twain's America, A Celebration in Words and Images, tells the story of how Clemens became Mark Twain and what his world was like. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. Joining me is Harry L. Katz, independent curator and writer specializing in American graphic art. He is the former head curator in the Prints and Photographs Division at the Library of Congress. He's the author of the book under discussion this hour, as well as the editor and co-author of another book, Baseball Americana, Treasures of the Library of Congress. Good afternoon, Mr. Katz, and welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and happy holidays to everybody.
Well, and to you as well. What a fascinating book. This is it's quite a volume, and a lot of illustrations. We'll talk some more about that as we move along. But I was very appreciative of being able to read this, and I'm happy that you're here today to talk about Mark Twain, because it's hard to imagine an American author who is more loved than Mark Twain. Even today, 100 years after he's gone, a lot of people still read The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn, all of the better known and a lot of the lesser known works that that came out under Twain's name. Take us back to the time when Clemens was writing. You write that everybody clamored to read his books: the rich, the poor, adults, children. So what was it about Mark Twain that was appealing to such diverse groups? Why was he so universally in demand in the time of his fame?
Well, I think it came down to his humor, his humanity, and his honesty. He wrote from a perspective that was very unusual. There had been travel writers. There had been comic writers. There were commentators on the world stage, but he became all of those because of his appeal, because he didn't, you know, even in the satire, he dignified the characters. He was from the South. He had been to the West. He had succeeded in the North and Northeast in a big way. So he, in that way, he sort of represented the nation in all those regions, and he had seen people living. He had seen the people along the river when he was growing up. He had lived with miners and lived the report of this wild reporter's life in the West, and came back and became, you know, one of the literary lions of the country. And I think it's just this appeal where he could laugh at himself, but still there was a gravitas, there was a self-dignity to what he wrote about, and he imparted that to all his characters. And so I think people appreciated that, even when he depicted somebody who was ill-kempt or living in poverty in the South, he'd give them that same kind of dignity, although he'd also present them in a satirical way.
So why is it, though, that Twain is still so popular? Because his books still sell, they're still published, they still get assigned reading to us in school and so forth.
Well, he's more read. Yeah, he's more read now than he ever was, because we're in an Internet age where you can go as deep as you ever could into his life and his writings, but you can also go on Twitter and see, you know, the sayings from Pudd'nhead Wilson's Calendar or some of those wonderful quotes, TwainQuotes.com. You can go on there and you can see all of these quotes that keep inspiring Americans as we go. He was sort of outside his time. He saw the future. He described the future in many of his books. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's sort of come of age
in the digital world, because now you can see everything. You can see how he fit in. You could see why he was making the remarks that he was making about, you know, he's read by anti-imperialists all over the world. He's read by people interested in race and racism all over the world. And he's, you know, in America, we revere him. Around the world, he is revered, but not always for the same reasons, because he was very critical. You know, he's that's the other thing about, you know, these great people in American society who can be critical but still be celebrated. And that, well, you know, he was forgiven for many of his sort of excessive rants, but he was, you know, always willing to say what he needed or felt he wanted to say.
Well, and wasn't it Mark Twain, Clemens, and we kind of use the names interchangeably, and I want to talk about that a little bit later too. But didn't he coin the term the Gilded Age, not in a kind way toward what was going on in his lifetime economically?
Yeah. So in the early 1870s, he moves into the neighborhood of Hartford and encounters all these great writers of the age, Harry Beecher Stowe, and there was a Charles Dudley Warner living nearby, and they concocted this book together that was called The Gilded Age, and it was 1873. It was pretty much just as the Gilded Age was getting going as we know it, and he lined it up. He talked about the impact of the robber barons and corporations. He showed us the work of Washington lobbyists and how much you had to pay for a congressman versus a senator versus a powerful female lobbyist. They all had price tags. And, you know, he just sort of lays out the whole Washington scene, and then he takes it regionally where there are speculators trying to, you know, ramp up dreams of mighty rivers from little waterways, you know, from little creeks. It's just a time of great speculation, great corruption, and he's writing it all down with Charles Dudley Warner. It's a brilliant expose of American politics.
So I guess it really is true that there's nothing new under the sun. You mentioned speculators. Samuel Clemens' father was a speculator, and not a very good one.
In a big way. Well, it was hard to be, you know, it was tough to be a good speculator. You know, in any kind of speculation, you're taking a great deal of risk. His father had purchased tracts of land in Tennessee, and successive panics and recessions sort of made that land worthless for a generation. And so there was no money coming back from his financial investments, and they moved to Missouri to be closer to family and also to speculate down there. He was, again, a failed speculator in the South. He had a measure of community support and dignity, but they were poor. And relied on the help of others. And that's kind of a failed, a series of failures that Mark Twain actually recreated in his own life later, when he dumped tens of thousands of dollars into an unworkable printer. And then even after he recouped his fortune later in life, he plunked down another large chunk of money on some milk biscuits that were supposed to be healthy and didn't work. So he was always striving for that fortune, even though there were times when he was, you know, extremely wealthy and very rich.
I'd like to talk about how coming of age, when he did in the middle of the 19th century, at the edge of what was then the frontier, shaped Clemens. What was it about growing up then that maybe had the most impact on him later when he became a writer?
Right. Well, as you say, it was a matter of, you know, he was, where was he and when was this? And he was on the edge of civilized society. He grew up. He was born in Florida, Missouri, which was really a prairie town west of Hannibal. And they were there for a few years. He was sickly. He was really very sensitive. The biographers talk about his spiritual sensitivity, perhaps because he was a shut-in as a toddler. But it was a lively household. They had family, and the family had were slave owners, so there was the exposure to slave life and slave relationships within a family setting, which I think he took with him, that dignity, the dignity of the slaves, their own life, their spirituality, their issues. You know, he matured as a man steadily from that time where he's in short, you know, you think of him in short pants on the edge of the Mississippi and now in Hannibal when he's older and he's meeting all these people coming off the riverboats, and he's meeting, you know, whether they're fancy travelers or card sharps or, you know, flat boatmen who work the river. He's seeing all these people. He's seeing terrible things in the streets that no kid should see. But he processes those into, this is my field of vision. These are the people that I know. This is how I know that there's a world out there, because they tell me there's a world out there. And so I think that starting point in the river, at a time when rivers meant everything to Americans, they carried cargo, but they also carried, you know, with people like Twain, his hopes, his dreams, his ambitions, and then later he turns that into fine literature.
And they carried news. I mean, there wasn't really a national
Absolutely.
Newspaper. There was no TV or radio or anything like that.
Exactly right. So the news came, and his older brother Ryan was a printer from early on, and had print was involved with newspapers in Hannibal, and in the print shop they would get the latest journals. Well, maybe not the latest. It would take a while to get there, but they'd get. The journals that came in, and he was able to see those illustrated journals, read the newspapers, work with his brother to you know, put newspapers together as a printer's devil and an apprentice, and that's really where he started.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I guess we look at Mark Twain's work through the prism of our own experience now in the 20th and 21st century, but in looking at in terms of how people became well-known or got to be famous or what people regarded as entertainment, I'd like to put a little context on this. For example, I've heard that in the West, people often attended criminal trials just to hear the lawyers give speeches, because most of them knew more about the Bible and Shakespeare than they did about the law, and they were quite entertaining. People would drive for miles to hear a good lawyer talk.
Yep.
And that was considered. I mean, people welcomed traveling lecturers. They all found entertainment value in patent medicine salesmen and even public hangings. So, you know, if we look at Twain through that prism, what's the picture that we get that what do we need to understand about Twain's time that we wouldn't right. understand because we weren't there?
Well, it was an oral, you know, he talks very clearly about the comic story in America being an oral tradition. There is an oral tradition in America that I think, you know, was so deeply embedded in the middle of the 19th, you know, orators were prized. All that you think about the Lincoln-Douglas debates, you think about all the great, you know, statesmen orators, Daniel Webster, it was a show. As much as anything. And so the oral tradition was already planted in America, because you know, during political season in the rural areas, you get together and you have the orators and you have cider and everything. And so there's that tradition. But there's also the growing tradition in the middle of the 19th century toward celebrity, toward lecturers. You know, all the great writers of the day were involved in lecture circuits, and Twain got in on that. He began, he gave his first public appearances in Nevada, but in San Francisco, started to lecture, and back east he became as familiar on the lecture circuit as anybody. And that, with his books, with all of his books also filled with images of Twain himself going through all his comic adventures. So he's a face that everybody knows. He's instantly recognizable. And that's where his career just takes off, and he can begin to commentate, and he begins to reach sort of a statesman-like oracular level.
You know, you mentioned images, and that's a key point, and it's certainly a key component of your book, a lot of pictures and drawings and things. When we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'd like you to touch on the importance of the illustrations in the writings of Mark Twain, what they meant, and why they were important, because I think that's a point a lot of people miss. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join our program. Let me ask the audience to join in here with this idea in mind. What's your favorite Mark Twain book or essay? What's your favorite work of Mark Twain? Do you still read Mark Twain's writing? What is it that appeals to you about it? And why do you think Mark Twain has such a wide appeal today? 800-642-1234. Email address is talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And you can also post your comment or question on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Talking with Harry Katz, who is the author of the book, Mark Twain's America, A Celebration in Words and Images, written by Harry L. Katz and the Library of Congress. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Today on the Kathleen Dunn program, we're talking about a brand new book just published last month, Mark Twain's America, Celebration in Words and Images. We have Harry L. Katz, the author of the book, with us this hour, and you can join us as well at 800-642-1234. Now, before the break, I mentioned I wanted when we came back, you touched on the images in Twain's books. There were when we're talking about images, we're not just talking about literary imagery here. We're talking about actual drawings and things of that nature. Why were those so important to what Twain wrote?
Well, yes, I'm a visual historian, and I've always worked with pictures. I think where Twain is remarkable in his early knowledge. Any publisher knows that pictures can sell magazines because not everybody can either wants to take the time to read. You put potent images into a journal, and you're gonna attract people because they love to see things and to understand things visually. And in books, it's generally a text-driven type of situation. But I always have been interested in images and the way they work. They express more than documents sometimes. You can see into the past, and you can recreate that time through visual. And with Twain, his life was shown in pictures. It's a reality show, You see him going through his life and making these changes in his personal and professional circumstances. But you also see the wealth of images that are going on around him. In other words, the things that he is seeing, the people that he is meeting, the issues he's encountering, the life as it was then and how he responded to it. And I think that's, more important than the Twain story itself is how he was embraced and why he was embraced. And I think we show that in the way that we lay out the book.
Mm-hmm. And then I want to go back to something else that you commented on earlier when we were talking about the age in which Mark Twain came about. The phenomenon that was Mark Twain came about, Clemens' own background. How much of the success of Samuel Clemens as an author was due to great timing? Was he just born at the right time for somebody with his unique set of skills to shine? Was this basically just some luck, do you think?
No, it's not luck when this happens. It is a matter of timing, but he created himself. It's not as if we created him. He very consciously, from an early age, pushed the boundaries of his life, pushed the horizons of his life, kept looking for ways to get out in the world and to make something of himself. And I think that he was the hardest working man in show business. He was everywhere, sometimes because he had to be, and sometimes because he was just trying to push his brand, get copyright, all sorts of things like that. And so he was constantly moving. And so I think he's part of that whole generation of when the middle class is coming of age. People who have never had a chance in life are now getting opportunities to do things that they've dreamed of. Mm. And he, you know, for as many false starts that he has in his life, and there's some very funny ones, he also latches onto opportunities, the opportunity to go on the Innocence Abroad tour on the Quakers. You know, that was something that he did himself. You know, he just had this journalistic sense that this is what I should do. It just happened to be the first public tour. He met all these people who then vaulted him into a new situation socially and professionally, and he became a best-selling author. He was in the right place at the right time, but without his own initiative, without his own ambitions, it never would have happened.
So we won't talk about luck then. We'll simply say he was a hard worker who took advantage of a confluence of fortunate events.
There is luck in his circumstances, but there's just this kind of vision of that I think he had from early on, that he wanted to be something special and be something more than he was and had been. He wanted independence. He wanted independence as a steamboat pilot, and he wanted independence as a writer and commentator.
He was not expected to live past age 7. He expected to die at age 7. I mean, he was a sickly child, as you pointed out. I mean, I guess one of the things that might give you is a real appreciation for the present.
You would think so. I mean, even after that, he sort of kept tempting death. It's a very interesting relationship he has with his own existence. I mean, he questions it from very early on. He sort of, you know, taunts God in the way that he exposes himself to a childhood disease at one point, and then sort of reckless living. It's a very fascinating aspect of his, you know, his relationship with his God and with his mortality.
Let's take some phone calls. We'll go to Brian in Madison first. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
can
go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Anyway, you know, one of the things about Twain I think is important is I think, you know, he gave people a way to question their own assumptions and their own beliefs, you know. But one of his quotes, don't quote me exactly, but it's not what you don't know that matters most. It's what you know that just ain't so. And I think that's the way he put it, you know. You know, there was a lot of, you know, deeply held beliefs back then, I'm sure there are, as there are now, you know, that just aren't so, you know. And I think that he witnessed that as a kid growing up. And, you know, he was friends with, you know, the slaves. And I think that that's one of the things that ultimately really drove him, is he wanted to show the irony. And he wanted to show that, hey, some of these assumptions that we think are right just aren't, you know. And I think that had a lot to do with the dignity and humanity that the author mentioned just a second ago.
Brian, thanks for the call. Mr. Katz. We're having trouble hearing you. You might need to move a little bit. I know you're on a cell phone. Okay. There you go. That's better. Go ahead. I think we need to reconnect here because we keep losing you.
You can't hear me?
Oh, there you go. That's better. Now I got you.
Sorry about that.
Not a problem.
When he's
It's the technology. Go ahead.
So when he's writing about the river in Tom Sawyer, he's writing about the South, and he's writing it from memory and imagination, and there's a lot of wonder and a lot of romance along with the danger and the adventure. But when you get into Huck Finn, he had gone back to the South. He had gone back to the river and seen the way it had sort of been held back by the war and the backward things that were going on in the South, and he criticized those. And he said, you know, I love the South, but I can't keep those illusions. Those illusions are keeping us all back. And so I think there was always this great sensitivity in Twain between what was real and what people had, what people expected.
And you, one of the things that was a major event, obviously, in Twain's own life, and it brings up some of this, what you were just talking about, was the Civil War. He was kind of in a tough spot there in Missouri. He had sympathies with the South, but he believed in the Union. And talk about how that played out and what effect, how that may have actually ended up launching his career.
Yeah, well, it is ironic, but in 1861 he was a steamboat pilot, and the war stopped traffic on the river, so he had no job. He didn't want to go into the military. To boats, and so for a brief time, he with the secession and the outbreak of the war, there was a group of Hannibal men gathered in an irregular militia to protect the environment, protect the city. There's a comic description of that, of all these young men sort of expecting the worst and dealing with that. So he had that short little burst of militarism, and it didn't sit well with him. He really wanted to, go out and be something other than a soldier. And so his brother at the time was appointed through his connections with the Lincoln administration to secretary of the new Nevada territory. And so the two brothers, Sam Clemens took that opportunity to join his brother. They went out west to Nevada, California. He became Mark Twain, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, and a lot of great stories came out of that, and you talk about them in the book. Let's take some more calls. We'll go next to Nina, and Barbara is on the line with us. Barbara, go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me, because I'm on the road?
Yep, we can hear you just fine.
Okay. My favorite story of Mark Twain, that Mark Twain wrote, was the Bible according to Mark Twain. It's actually very comical, especially when it came to Adam and Eve's creation and how they named the animals. So funny, it probably could be on Saturday Night Live. I was just wondering what religious background Mark Twain had, and what were his thoughts on the Bible?
Oh, great question, Barbara. Mr. Katz. We lost you again.
Christian, do you hear me?
Yeah, there you go.
He was, he was a Christian. He kept...
And you're cutting out again, so that's a little better. But I tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to have our producers call you back and see if we can get a little better cell. I know you're on a cell phone, and sometimes one cell is better than another. So we're going to do that, and then when we come back, we'll have some more calls. We're talking about the book Mark Twain's America, A Celebration in Words and Images, written by Harry L. Katz and the Library of Congress, published by Little Brown. A book just came out in October, and a lot of pictures in this book, a lot of illustrations, maps, things from Twain's books, illustrations from his books, pictures of Mark Twain and members of his family. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. And you can also join us on Facebook. There's a Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page that you can post a comment or question to, or you can send an email. talk@wpr.org is the address. Harry L. Katz is my guest today. He is an independent curator and writer specializing in American graphic art. He's the former head curator in the Prints and Photographs Division at the Library of Congress, and among his other works, he is the editor and co-author of Baseball Americana, Treasures of the Library of Congress. Gee, maybe if I learn to read someday, I can go into radio. Okay, Harry Katz, I believe we have you back on the line. Hopefully this sells a little better. Our last caller was asking about Twain's religious background. What was it?
Yeah, well, he grew up in a Christian household. His mother was very pious, and he grew up, but he was always sort of fatalistic, and he challenged his religion. He challenged the God. He couldn't understand why God would make men and women so fallible, so frail. And as his life went on, he kept pushing those religious issues, but he really never lost his faith. He just, you know, went through very difficult times and wondered what is man's fate and what is our relationship with God.
Mm-hmm. You commented earlier that he tried and failed at a number of things. He had a lot of different kind of starts and stops to his career on the way to becoming famous. How typical were his experiences for someone of his generation in terms of having to struggle, trying a lot of different things? It seems like there was a lot more opportunity for people to either make or lose their fortunes in the 19th century than there might be today.
Right. It was certain, you know, it depended where you were, again, in your circumstances. There was a growing middle class, and people had more opportunities in terms of factory work, farm work, other things like that. But when you're somebody like Twain, who is so independently minded, it's, you know, he really wanted to be independent. He wanted to be in a position of responsibility and control. And so, there are funny things. You know, he goes in the West, he tries to become a timber mogul and burns down the forest there. Just, you know, where he's trying, and another where he, you know, before he became a steamboat pilot, he was on his way to New Orleans to get involved in drug trafficking in Brazil. It was just this weird kind of time when he's just thinking about all these different options and how he can make his fortune and be something special. And it was a time that allowed that. It was a time of, you know, again, as you say, great success, great failure, in a way similar to ours, challenging financial times. Some people are doing very well. Other people are struggling. And a writer, certainly in those circumstances, has to take every opportunity to find material. He couldn't write about, you know, things he didn't know. He didn't want to. He wanted to write about the things that he knew, he had witnessed, that he felt, that he thought, mm-hmm. and that were familiar to him. And so I think by getting out in the world and doing all that traveling, you know, as he says, the educate you can't go out in the world and travel and not develop sensitivity toward other people and other lands.
Let's take a quick call before we go to another break. We'll go to Dimitri in Milwaukee. Dimitri, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me. Actually, a great segue from what your guest just said about sensitivity toward other people. So I know in this country we tend to sensationalize and focus on the glories of great people in our history, Ford and Mark Twain as well. But I wanted your guest to talk through the anti-Semitism that Mark Twain expressed is a piece titled Concerning the Jews, and really his extremely negative viewpoint toward Jews in general throughout history.
Well, you know, I can respond to that. I think, you know, you can read that essay in a number of ways. Certainly there is no doubt that during his lifetime, you know, Mark Twain felt many of the prejudices, in ways that it's hard to understand, you know, when we think of him. But I think with the Jews, there is some ambiguity. I also think that he felt that, you know, they were like other people. There were good Jews and bad Jews, and that's sort of, to my mind, the way he put it. But I can't say, you know, with racism, with ethnicity, all these things, he matured in his life. But he still retained many of those early prejudices.
How much was he a reflection of the culture of his age in that?
Well, it's sort of a fun mirror reflection, is the way I would put it, because some of these issues, you know, take on greater proportions. But yeah, he was absolutely. I mean, he grew up in a time when Jews and blacks, Native Americans, women were all excluded from the immigrants were all excluded from the mainstream process, and he talked about that. I think he didn't talk about it in equal terms because he had some of those prejudices. He could be chauvinistic,
mm-hmm.
and in a way, women, and patronizing. And so, but he was also a huge supporter of women's rights, and some notable women like Helen Keller, who would go through a wall for him because of his support. So, yeah, he's a complicated man. But I think in the end, it is his humanity. It is his willingness to dissent and to be, speak independently that makes him so effective mm-hmm. today.
Dimitri, thanks so much for that phone call and for your perspective. 800-642-1234, the number to call. Lines available for you. We're talking about Mark Twain. The occasion is the publication of a new book called Mark Twain's America, a celebration in words and images. And the images in this book are worth the book cost alone. There's some just really wonderful, wonderful images in here. And then the words to go with them, it was an enjoyable read for me this week. This is one of the days when I can't believe I get paid to do this. We're talking with the author of today's book under discussion, Harry Katz, and we'll be back to continue that discussion in just a few moments. We're going to take a quick break. I'm John Munson, and for Kathleen Dunn, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. My guest is Harry L. Katz, the author of Mark Twain's America. He is an independent curator and writer specializing in American graphic art, former head curator in the Prints and Photographs Division at the Library of Congress. He's also the editor and co-author of another book titled Baseball Americana, Treasures of the Library of Congress. Well, we're talking about Mark Twain this hour. You mentioned... Harry Katz, you mentioned Helen Keller and her connection to Mark Twain. He likened her to Joan of Arc. What was their connection, and why did he compare her to Saint Joan?
Well, he loved women. He loved his wife. He loved his daughters. He held them up in high regard. And when he met a woman like Helen Keller, who had shown such grace and such determination and so much courage in adversity, he immediately thought of Joan of Arc, and he wrote, a fantastic book, one of his favorite books that he considered his best on the story of Joan of Arc, and I think there's a lot of his feelings about women and the role they can play. And in some ways, it's a very idealized role, but it also speaks to, that is an area where when he found a woman who was exceptional, he reacted very, very swiftly.
Let's take another phone call, this time Frank in Onalaska. We'll go to you next. Frank, thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, John. Fascinating story. After the questions about his version of the Bible and religion, I think we have to look at the two stories that impressed me most as a young man, and that was Letters from Earth and The Mysterious Stranger. I read those stories as a high school independent study project, coming with the perspective of the young child who grew up with the movies and books about Mark Twain and Tom Sawyer. So I was really surprised to hear his viewpoints coming from, the viewpoint of the old man who had lost his young daughter to a disease and put a lot of money into the typesetting business and publishing the memoir of Ulysses S. Grant, which is maybe one of his greatest contributions that he didn't write, maybe known as one of the better autobiographies ever published.
Absolutely.
What fascinated with those stories was the contrast from the children's author, if you can simplify it in that sense for Tom Sawyer, to his views on God and religion and even man, and how bitter it seemed he became in his old age, and that contrast between, the writings of a young person and the older person was really what fascinated me as a young person.
Yeah, that's fascinating. you know, even from a very early age, he was struggling with his own duality, his own sense of good and right and wrong and good and evil. And those took, you know, those just flowered in his later years after the passing, you know, the sad passing of Susie and the illnesses of his daughters and the death of Libby. You know, he finally gave vent to all those feelings about, you know, God versus the devil, Satan, the role of Satan on earth, and the way humans respond. But it was a theme he carried through even back in the 1870s in some of his writings. But it's certainly what older man, the older curmudgeonly man, is so familiar. I wanted to go back and see the younger man. I wanted to see the man who became that older man.
Frank, thanks so much for that phone call. 800-642-1234, the number to call. We still have time to get your call on this hour if you call right now. What's your favorite Mark Twain story or novel? What is and why is it your favorite? What is it about his writing that you love? And why do you think he has so much appeal today? All great questions for you to answer for us, dear listener. 800-642-1234. In 1865, Twain embarked on a one-year round-the-world trip along with his wife and daughter. What was his purpose on that voyage, and how was he received in other parts of the world?
Twain was a international celebrity. The first sort of international celebrity came in the late 60s. In the early 70s, he became known in England through the distribution of his books and throughout the English Empire. So he became a favorite in England, a favorite in the Empire, and a favorite around the world. And he and his family were known, as they were known through newspaper accounts. They were known through his letters. And, you know, so you see the family embarked on a Mark Twain voyage, and they are accepted around the world as you know, world citizens, not just American citizens, because of his stature.
Hmm. And what was the purpose of his trip when he made that around the world voyage? Just see the sights, or did he have something going on?
The around the world tour came when he was in financial straits. He had sold his Hartford house because the cost of keeping that up, plus the cost of his unstoppable penchant for speculation, he lost a lot of money. So they were facing bankruptcy, and the world tour recouped his losses. And within a year or two, he was back healthy and solvent, and working again. They were in Europe for a long time during the 1890s, again, to save money. But that just sort of elevated his role as statesman and a commentator. So
let's get in a few more calls before we run out of time here. Peggy and Winona, you'll be next. Peggy, go ahead.
I would just like to say that there's a couple stories of him that, or by him rather, that don't seem to get much notice nowadays. One of them is the story of the good little boy, and its flip side, which is the story of the bad little boy, that are very, very funny. And the Diary of Adam and Eve, which is hysterical if you, of course, like Twain's tongue-in-cheek humor. But they're hard to find in most of the anthologies, but they're definitely very much worth reading.
Peggy, thanks for pointing that out. What Harry Kentz, what are some of the other lesser-known works that deserve more attention from Mark Twain's bibliography?
Well, it is fascinating to talk with people because we as you said, we all have our Mark Twain, and we all have, you know, some favorites. And, you know, I talk to people, and I talk about the book, and they say, well, my dad read The Man That Corrupted Hadleysburg. Hadleyburg, and it was one of the funniest things that he ever read, and loved it his whole life. I think we all sort of, within our own experiences, we can find something in Twain that just speaks to us directly. I love the Adam and Eve, the diaries. I mean, they're just beautiful, lyrical, funny, you know, and so at any given time in his life, you can go in and pick out an article and pick out a writing that speaks directly to you.
Peggy, thanks for the call and for those suggestions. I've made note of them for later perusal myself. Let's go to Dave in Wausau. Dave, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Great show. I'm wondering if your guest might have some kind of brief anecdotal backstory regarding how he arranged or what he had to go through to arrange to delay the publication of his autobiography until he had been dead 100 years. That's just fascinating to me, aside from all the other fascinating stuff about the man. Thank you, and I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
So Mark Twain didn't want his autobiography published until 100 years after he was dead. What was up with that?
Well, he had an authorized biographer, Taine, who lived with him, worked with him, helped him shape the autobiography as it appeared, serialized in the years before his death. And then, you know, there have been various versions of the autobiography put out by scholars. The 100 years that he knew, you know, some of his more provocative, The Mysterious Stranger was actually completed by the estate and published in 1916 after his death. There's a sense that with some of his writings, they were simply too controversial to be published at the time in the forum that he was writing for. And so, you know, it's not unusual when, you know, I worked at the Library of Congress for many years, it's not unusual for somebody in the public eye, a Supreme Court justice, a president, a writer of Mark Twain's stature to say, you know, in with the literary executor that this cannot be published for 100 years.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting. So what was it that led you to write this book? I'm assuming that you've long been an admirer of Samuel Clemens, an admirer of the work of Mark Twain. What was it that caused you to say, you know what, I want to sit down and put all this stuff into a book?
Well, there were two things. I have a very close friend who lives in Redding, Connecticut, where he died, and she and her son are Twainiacs. That was a term that I had never been aware of 5 years ago.
Are there conventions for this? Is it like being a Trekkie?
I think what's fascinating for me is they're out there, and I talked to you know, there's this quote at the front of the book where Twain talks about the best fame is that it just permeates the audience, and it's just out there, and you know it's there, you just don't know how to touch it. And that's what Twain is still today, 100 years later. You know his influence is out there. You can feel it in the internet. You can see it in the bookstores. You can see it, the influence on literature and all of these things. And so that's very powerful. I wanted to explore that. I was also just a very passionate fan of Twain, who said, my God, he led a visual life. He led a public life. He was, you know, claimed by both the robber barons and the poor in the street. And how do you do that? How do you accommodate and attract all those people in a way that they all agree that Mark Twain is the best writer we've ever seen?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So was there any one thing that really surprised you when you were doing the research for this book?
I think it's what we alluded to before, that he took seemingly every chance to have an adventure that he could then write about.
Mm-hmm.
He seemingly just jumped at every opportunity. He did what he needed to do, certainly on the lecture circuit, but he really was able to, I think, maintain himself and his brand and become somebody who could speak independently, speak his own mind, and even if people didn't agree, they respected him for that.
And that's where we'll have to leave it. Thank you, Harry Katz, for a really enjoyable hour. Appreciate your time.
Well, all right. Thank you so much.
The book is Mark Twain's America. Harry Katz, the author, was our guest. Cynthia Schuster produced this hour of programming and also handled on-air production. Dave Potratz did his usual fine job as the board operator. It takes a village to raise a talk show. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Oh, go ahead and eat too much. You know you want to. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.